call the meeting to order. And today is February the 20th, and welcome to the Technical Advisory Committee. Kyle, Interstate Planning Commission. First thing on the agenda is a motion to approve the minutes. But do we want to do the introductions? We do, yeah. Okay, well, let's start on the telephone. Let's see who's on there. Matt, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Matt Sellhorst from HDR.
Aaron Houston from Kimley Horn.
Steve Berman from the Medic Smith Group.
Eric Lang from CDM Smith.
Great, well, welcome. Glad you're here and on the telephone. Go to my left.
Oh, Bethany Wild with Tioga.
Mike St. Lawrence County Transit.
Kara Greathouse, Regional Council of Charleston.
Scott Thompson, ODOT District 9.
Beth Martin, the Medic Smith Group.
Patrick Valley, Orange County.
Paul Young, Tioga.
Jody Sigmund, Tioga.
Shiner Engel Smith, Federal Highway.
Morning, Bernadette Dupont, Kentucky Federal Highway.
Thomas Witt, Kentucky Transportation Cabinet.
Jennifer Woodall, Tri-State Transit Authority.
Brian Fraser, Tri-State Transit Authority.
Randy Williams, City of Ashland.
Terry Sicking, Tioga.
Talim Salami, Tioga.
And I'm Paul Davis, I'm TTA, Tri-State Transit Authority. And if you guys were wondering, Brian Fraser is our mobility manager now at TTA, and my bodyguard. If you guys want to talk to me about anything, you got to go to him first.
You on the campaign trail with him?
Well, I should, yeah. Okay, so we need a motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting, which was September the 26th. And the meeting
that happened in the street. I'll make the motion to approve.
Second. All right. Patrick, second. Jennifer, first. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The ayes have. Thank you very much. We do have a little bit of business to take care of. So we are going to need a vice chair for the Technical Advisory Committee, and I guess we'll need a motion to
nominate that's the case here.
Patrick?
I nominate Patrick for the vice chair.
First?
Or did he want something?
He did. Second. Okay, Patrick, you accept?
I will.
Okay. Okay. All in favor? Any further discussion? Anybody else? Is there any further nomination? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the aye.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, sir. Okay. That means I get to leave, right? Okay,
that's
I don't know.
Works at TPS.
What's that?
That's how it works at TPS.
It is. You notice it. Well, okay, item number four on our agenda is the Kyle Transportation Studies projects and updates, and we have some updates, I believe, via phone. Who's going to go first? Gretchen?
Yes, hello.
Yes, hi, Gretchen.
Hi.
You ready? We have, he is ready to forward your slides. Just let him know. Need to move forward. Okay, Gretchen?
Okay, sorry, you broke up there just a little bit. Someone's ready to advance them, you're saying?
Yeah, so Paul, we'll be advancing your slides. Just let us know when you need that to be done.
Okay, all right, sounds good, thank you. So, hello, I'm my name's Gretchen Johnson. I've been working on the TTA impact study with Kyova and TTA, taking a look at the bus routes. So let's see. I guess we'll go right to the second slide there, talking about the goals for the study quickly. It was really aimed at looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the existing system, reviewing travel patterns, and doing a lot of data collection to look at how efficient and effective the service is currently. And then kind of the most important thing is trying to look at gaps in the system or where there may be needs, but that the service either through realignment or, you know, changes to the operating characteristics, things like that, that could better meet the needs for getting around Huntington. So the kind of second large goal was to, you know, make some recommendations for service improvements, track new riders, serve the existing riders better. We don't want to alienate anyone that currently uses it and relies on it. And then just look at the overall productivity and how we can improve that so that we can get the most bang for the buck. So that's the next slide, third slide. We take a very kind of three-pronged approach to the to studies like this, really looking at what does the market, what does the demand say, and I'll get that into that in just a second. But then what do the numbers say? So by numbers, we mean sort of the ridership, the performance characteristics, a lot of data crunching there, and looking at what does the data set tell us. But just as important is really learning what the what people say. So you know, there's only so much that the demand or the market and the numbers can tell us. We really need to hear from the people what they need, what's working well, what's not working as well. And this includes a broad spectrum of people. So, you know, people who drive, people who ride, people who don't ride. So I wanted to quickly take you through some of this. I'm not going to be able to get into a ton of detail. But the first thing we did, so I guess go on to slide four. One of the first things we did was a market analysis, and this is just a map showing the demand for transit based on population and employment densities. So those densities really help explain a lot of the demand that we see on transit. It's not the only thing, of course. We do look at a lot of the socioeconomic characteristics and a lot of other data like major employers, points of interest, things like that. But this is kind of a good starting point for determining demand. And so this map is showing, at the beginning of the study, the TTA service went in Huntington, but also went at the TTA Ohio service. So this map includes Ironton, Ashland. But you can see the sort of in the top one and in that Huntington CBD map that a lot of the population employment density is right in downtown in the neighborhoods, just immediately surrounding downtown, south of downtown. And then the colors that are sort of like green and yellow, that's where it starts to make sense to offer fixed route service based on our experience and research that we've done. That's kind of where the fixed route service starts making sense. So so you can see sort of the downtown, but then kind of radiating outwards along major corridors, which is, you know, later on we'll look at where we looked at where the service goes today. And so overall it matched pretty well. So if you go on to the next slide, slide five, then we did a pretty comprehensive ridership by stop and by trip data collection effort. And so this is a map looking at ons and offs, and it's, of course, a flag system. So we had to estimate kind of where the stops or where people got on and off. We aggregated them to nearest intersections and used the time points in the schedule, but also in the RouteShout app. So this is looking at the kind of look what I was talking about before, was looking at the numbers. And so again, you know, kind of matches where there's density. Right in downtown is the largest ridership. This actually does not include the TTA center, because of course that would be a huge, huge dot. But, you know, seeing Pullman Square there and things right in downtown show the greatest ridership, and then the Walmart out the Huntington Walmart out on Route 60. But clearly the highest ridership along along those corridors east and west, and then along Route 60. The next slide is just kind of more zoomed out view. You can see that ridership also stays high out to the Huntington Mall, and that there's a decent amount of ridership too out to Canova and Cerrito. So it's kind of a good way. This is a good way to get a handle on how well the routes are matching to the underlying market demand that we looked at, and it's also we do a very detailed route by route evaluation, so it helped there to evaluate each route and which segments are doing well, which segments aren't doing as well. So then the last prong that I was talking about, or leg stool of the stool, is what do the people say? And so one of the things we did is back in spring of last year, we did a, not necessarily a statistically valid survey, but we went out and had a kind of a 6-question survey that we tried to get as many people to take at the TTA Center. We also had it available online. And so these are just, I mean, we also went to Marshall as well. These are some of the results from that. Sorry, I just noticed that my words there are backwards, but there's a very strong preference for that middle, if you look at the middle bar there, there's a very strong preference for more weekend service among riders and other people who took the survey. So that was, we asked people to look at trade-offs, so that was over more weekday service. Although we heard a lot of, you know, needing more service in the nighttime and things like that, overall people really preferred the more weekend service. And then serving new areas, improving the existing service and offering more frequent service were sort of moderately strongly preferred over trying to serve new areas or expanding and offering longer service hours. So this helps give us sort of a metric for redesigning the service as, you know, moving forward, just to help us understand where our priorities lie and where what people value. So next slide. I won't go over all of these, but as we went into developing recommendations, we follow certain kind of guiding principles. Overall, the most important is just that service should be simple, should be super easy for people to use. It should be designed that it's very intuitive and just see if someone can pick up a schedule and pretty much figure it out within a few minutes to figure out, you know, what route they need, where they can get to, where they can't get to. And other principles are, talking about kind of the design of service with operating at regular intervals, people understand repeating patterns, irregular sequences are harder for people to understand, operating along a very direct path rather than circuitous, routes should be symmetrical so that they go outbound and inbound along the same alignment where possible, and of course the one-way couplets or things like that can make things difficult, but we try to minimize those as much as possible. And then making sure that the routes serve well-defined markets, a mix of anchors, a mix of residential, retail, things like that, and then that they are well-coordinated. So this is, of course, really important for a pulse-based system, which is what TTA has. So right now it's very well-coordinated. You can do less of this if you have a very high-frequency service, but at major transfer locations, schedules should be very, very coordinated, and so people can transfer and get where they need to go. So the next slide there, I just kind of put an example of a route that does this pretty well today. I mean, there's other issues with the route, but it's very well, it's a straight, very direct, straight, operates every hour, 45 past the hour in the morning, 15 past the hour in the afternoon. So people can very easily remember that. And it serves a mix of residential areas and medical services, other social services. So it's a route that does kind of fits that those guiding principles pretty well today. So then the next slide, going into recommendations, or our draft recommendations right now. We tried to follow the guiding principles as much as possible and incorporate our technical findings and stakeholder input. We initially provided two service redesign options, and then we decided to kind of focus on one because there are a lot of constraints with this system in terms of geographic constraints and also just design constraints with 3rd and 5th Avenue and railroad tracks and yards and things like that. So we really kind of wanted to focus on one so that we can could get to a one scenario that we could get some feedback on and kind of cut out some of the confusion that could be caused with two. So this, the next slide, slide 11 there, is a overview of the recommendations. Probably a little bit tough to see. So I'll just quickly talk about a couple of the major ones. The next few slides go through those in written form. I thought maybe I'd just kind of talk you through them now rather than kind of delving into a lot of the details. But you're, of course, welcome to look at some of those bullet points as well, too. But I'll kind of walk you through a few of them. Overall, the alignments didn't change a whole lot. There's a few that we kind of straightened out and made a little bit more direct. Those include the Route 2, 4, and 8 there, the purple, pink, and orange, trying to kind of get them into the TTA center in a very direct manner, but still facilitating, of course, the transfers at the TTA center. And then there's actually a quite a bit of transfer activity where the Route 4 or Route 2 today and Route 5 meet up outside of the TTA center. So still facilitating those transfers, but taking Route 8 directly in past the hospital and directly into the TTA center, still hitting Marshall though as well. with some service that we eliminated the route that goes into Route 7 currently today that goes into Barboursville, but we replaced that with other service and were able to increase during the peak periods the frequency on Route 6. So offer service every 30 minutes during peak hours on Route 6. And then the Route 7 service would be replaced with Route 5 doing a few more. So it does some deviations today into Walmart, Kmart, things like that. And really we saw that the ridership was on Route 7 was very overall pretty low outside of the Huntington Mall, and that Route 5 could pretty easily cover those points. I mean, I think one of the harder ones is probably GC Services in Altizer, but still feasible to offer service along that Route 60 corridor with 5 doing some more sort of flex or deviations along the route. And taking Route 5 in, you can see in the map, into Barboursville and ending it at Huntington Mall. So there's still service to those areas. It just takes over some of the Route 7, 7 service. The other thing about the Route 60 corridor is we are trying to add a little bit of frequency on there. There's already Route 9 on it. We're suggesting do a little bit more of an offset to try to get service along there every about every 30 minutes, so that people can have a bus come a little bit more frequently for a lot of the stops along there. Route 9 does not won't deviate quite as much, but still hits the major ones like Walmart, so people can easily get into downtown from that corridor, since that was one of the major corridors of ridership. So I think those are sort of the major major changes. Route 3 also currently goes to Lesage, and it's a couple routes, a couple trips a day, so that still works within the service hours. That's kind of up for, you know, as we work through and try to make some of these work. If that trip up there still works, you can certainly do that, but the ridership was only a couple people a day, so running trips up there was kind of costly. So right now it looks like we have route through 3 ending much sooner than that. And then I guess finally, just one of the we wanted to just suggest a pilot project to operate actually designated stops around route 6 to help speed it up a little bit, so that the bus doesn't have to stop at every intersection or as frequently as it does today. And then also a few designated stops on Route 9, US Route 60, to also help, keep it moving along. It's a very long route, so do some pilot projects there, including, I know Kyova was interested in looking at doing some bus turnouts, so the bus stops will include, or at least a few of them will include, turnouts. So those are the major ones. We're still, revising the final recommendation report, and so we welcome feedback and thoughts, and hopefully we can create something that will be really useful and hopefully work for Huntington.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Is there any questions for Gretchen? You're off the hook, Gretchen. Thank you so much. Very nice presentation. And we really appreciate that. And we really appreciate, from TPA's perspective, all the hard work that you guys have done for our study.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. I've really enjoyed working with you all.
Okay. Well, there's no questions. We're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the Lawrence County Non-Motorized Bicycle and Pedestrian Plan Truck Mobility Study. Matt Stellhorst.
Okay. So we're in the process of wrapping up really all the deliverables for the tasks that are part of these studies. And just real quick, I'll go through some of the tasks. I know I presented at your last meeting, and since then we've developed all the draft reports and recommendations, and so I'll go through those real quick. Just a reminder of the tasks that are part of these studies on the first slide. There's the Park Avenue Traffic Study, where we're looking at developing improvements for Park Avenue between 6th Street and the US 52 there in the city of Ironton. The second task was addressing the issues with the opening of the new bridge from November of 2016, specifically looking at some of the truck movements through downtown Ironton. The third part was looking at a bike and pedestrian plan for Lawrence County as well as the city of Ironton, and then also looking at then the sidewalks within the city. So we've been meeting, if you go to the next slide, we've been meeting monthly with the county, with the Community Action Organization, with the Economic Development, Kiowa, ODOT has been updated on everything. We held a public involvement stakeholder meetings last summer in July, and as we wrap things up, we're going to schedule a stakeholder meeting the first part of March that we can try to get feedback then on the final reports. So if you go to the next slide that has a picture of Park Avenue, highlighted, and so this kind of shows the Park Avenue corridor, what we did there. We developed long-term improvements, we completed all capacity analysis, and we developed the conceptual improvements. you go to the next slide, you see a kind of a slide shot of one part of Park Avenue near 6th and 7th Streets that highlights some of the recommended improvements. So you can kind of see where we were looking at redefining some of the driveways, possibly closing some driveways, providing pedestrian refugee islands, updating the signals, and improving the sidewalks in that area. So if you go to the next slide that shows the recommendations for Park Avenue, we came up with a cost of about $1.2 million for all these improvements. And these include resurfacing, signal timing, a new traffic signal at 8th Street, providing a right-in, right-out at 9th Street. So we talked a little bit with the city and the county about some new development around 8th and 9th Street, just south of Park Avenue. So these improvements at 8th and 9th then would kind of go along with what's happening there in that area. I mentioned about replacing and putting in new sidewalks, redefining some driveways, also providing some nice signage and some pedestrian islands for pedestrians, as well as a sidewalk along Park Avenue that would go under the 52 bridge up to the Ironton Hills shopping area. So that's the recommendations for Park Avenue. Shifting then to the truck study for truck movements through Ironton. On the next slide, you see the recommendations for the routes in Ironton, and there were specifically three areas. One was the 2nd Street Jefferson intersection. That's coming off of the new bridge there at 2nd Jefferson. The other part was trucks making those turns at 2nd Street and Park Avenue, and then as well as at 4th Street and Park Avenue, where some trucks, kind of was the previous, with the previous bridge, it was the previous truck route, but I know it still gets a lot of use. So those recommendations are in the range of, you know, some of them are $75,000 to $125,000. The 4th Street would be about $150,000 to $200,000. That includes some restriping, some curb work. With 4th Street, includes a little bit of right-of-way purchase. It does not include, like, resurfacing the roadway, though. Those are mainly just restriping and curbs and sidewalks. So let me show you those recommendations. So at 2nd Street, we know with traffic coming off the bridge, heading northwest on 2nd Street coming to the Jefferson Street intersection, it's currently striped as a left only and a through and a right coming off the bridge. And traffic is backing up onto the bridge itself, especially in the afternoon peak hour. And so we were asked to take a look at that, and we provided some recommendations to ODOT, and they're looking at that now. But it's basically to change that left only to a through left, because there just aren't making that left, and there's a lot more vehicles that want to make a right going on to Jefferson, so making that a right only. But however, that causes us to make a change on 2nd between Jefferson and Adams, because there's currently a left turn lane going from 2nd to Jefferson when it's going southeast to east. So we recommend removing that and making that 2nd Street just a two-lane street, where that lane then would be a shared left through and a right. That would help mitigate any of that backup onto the bridge. It also would help, if you go to the next slide, there's a rendering that we put together. Looking northwest from the Jefferson Street, 2nd Street intersection, you see the Dollar General. You see where we removed that left turn lane. It also allows us, though, then to add some parking, create some new sidewalks, some tree lawns, some trees, so make that, you know, much visually a better looking street there. But it also works with the traffic wise. So that's what that recommendation would include. So restriping the intersection, restriping 2nd Street, and then adding some curbs and tree lawns there. If you go to the next slide, it shows some improvements for Second Street Park Avenue. You have a plan view that shows some of the truck movements. I'm not sure how well you can see that, but shows some of how the truck movements are getting in the way of other traffic, running up on curbs, encroaching on the buildings. So we recommended that we revise some of the lanes stripings. We move some of the stop car locations. We do that on Park Avenue heading south. The sidewalk then we would narrow from 10 foot to 5 foot, and there should be enough room within the right-of-way to allow us to shift those lanes over so that when there's two opposing trucks, they can both make those turns. If you look down on 2nd Street there, we're shifting the westbound lane location just down south toward the river a little bit more to pull it out away from the building. There's enough room there on the roadway and on 2nd Street to make that happen. And then lastly, for the truck movements on 4th and Park Avenue on the next slide, it shows some improved intersection improvements for that radius of trucks making that turn from 4th Street on the Park Avenue coming around there. So we recommend kind of shifting that whole intersection back or that one quarter of the intersection. We'd have to move a signal pole for just a little bit of right-of-way there on that corner in that parking lot, but then it would allow those trucks to make that turn going on the Park Avenue. This is kind of the lower priority of the fixes, but it's still a needed fix. So, then shifting up to the bicycle and pedestrian plan task list, we went out, we did a lot of field work, we identified some gaps, we conducted a survey, we provided them some recommendations, and that was part of the draft master plan. If you go to the next slide, where it says Lawrence County recommendation list, you can see all the list of different recommendations that were made, all the way from striping for a boulevard, striping over a bridge, a new multi-use path, signage, shared use lanes. So there's a whole lot of different recommendations for the county. If anybody needs any maps or whatever. So all this is actually online. All the draft reports are online on the Cuyahoga website now. So if anybody wants to go on there and take a look and provide comments, it's all up there available. If you look at the next list, it says Ironton recommendation list. Has a whole range of different recommendations for bikes, shared use paths, signage, striping within the city. And you'll see it ranges anywhere from a couple million dollars to just a couple thousand dollars, depending on the fix. So some of it are the citywide sidewalks, some of them are shared streets, and then some of them are striping just for a bicycle boulevard. And then lastly, the last task was a sidewalk inventory and assessment. We did some mobile mapping where we collected all the widths of the roadway, all the elevations for the curb ramps. We've just finished up identifying the deficiencies. We've got all the slopes completed for all the ramps. We've looked at all the conditions. So we're in the process now of prioritizing that and putting a cost for that to make those improvements to bring everything up to standards and up to compliance. And we should have it completed here in about 2 to 3 weeks. And I guess with that, I can answer any questions. But again, all the reports are up online other than the sidewalk assessment. That'll be up shortly. And so we welcome any comments on any of the draft reports and recommendations. Comments, although they are looking at the 2nd and Jefferson Street intersection right now. When we did traffic counts, we took some video of that as well, and I'm sharing that with them now so that they can kind of verify what the delays are in that intersection.
Scott, did you
share this information with the...
I'm guessing he's probably been in contact with Patricia.
Because we need to make sure the district agree with the recommendation.
All...
The study actually mostly came from the district as a request.
I'll verify with Patricia that she's looking into that.
If not, because we're not the study at the end, we should be concluded soon. But we need to make sure then that the district will be able to act on these recommendations and their capacity.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again, Matt. We really do appreciate all your hard work. Okay. The next thing I have on the list is Lawrence County's US 52 interchange justification study.
Good morning. I'm Steve Bergman with the Manikin Smith Group. I'm the project manager for the project. Just to let you know, we were authorized and started the work late last fall. So I'll give you a brief update on where we're at on this project. The second slide, please. The traffic and safety study for US 52 and State Route 7 was completed in 2006. And recommended interchanges at the two bulleted locations, Burlington Retail Area Interchange between Burlington Macedonia Road and Walmart Way, and then Charlie Creek Road Interchange, and that would be a Diamond Interchange. The purpose of our work is to confirm interchange locations along 52 and identify local roadway improvements to improve safety, congestion, and access within the study area. Next slide. In front of you is our study area map. The project study area extends from just west of the trucking company to US 52 River Crossing to the east. As part of our contract, we're also performing safety analysis at County Road 1 and County Road 15 in the area of US 52. Next slide. Go through what we've done to date. Tasks completed to date included defining the study area, reviewing background information, particularly the traffic and safety study that was completed in 2006. We completed traffic counts at Charlie Creek, Sandusky Road, Walmart Way, Dallas Matthew Pike, and Burlington Macedonia Road, Court Street. We've also completed turning movement forecast along that corridor. Next slide. We have also documented data from the field. Held a stakeholder kickoff meeting on November 15th of last year and completed work on a subarea traffic demand forecasting model. HDR is doing that work for us, and we pulled out a portion of the regional model, and what we hope to do with that is get a better idea of future traffic volumes and projections, and then try to get ODOT approval for that so that we can move into the interchange justification phase of the project. Next slide, completed to date. ECAT safety analysis has been completed for the study area and County Road 1, County Road 15 area along US 52. We've done future year ECAT for County Road 1, County Road 15, and baseline crash frequencies within the study area. Next steps. Our next steps include verifying future land use. That's going to have an effect on the future traffic volumes. We got to make sure that matches with information contained in the model. Finalizing future traffic volumes, documenting and mapping environmental resources within the study area. That's a requirement as part of the ODOT IJS process. And identifying any geometric deficiencies along the corridor or even within the study area that may include local roadway intersection improvements. We will have another stakeholder meeting in March to go through existing conditions. We'll develop a purpose and need, which is going to be crucial in this project. develop and present some conceptual alternatives that we're coming up with. We'll also ask the stakeholders to provide some input based on their local knowledge on potential alternatives. And then we'll develop an evaluation criteria so we can get down to some preferred alternatives more than likely by the end of this year. Next slide, I've included the schedule for the project. If you need more details on that, let me know. Just a brief update. We've only been at this for a couple months now, but we are making progress. So appreciate the time today.
Okay. Questions or comments for Steve? Okay. Well, thank you very much. We really do appreciate the presentation.
Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. Okay. The next item on the agenda is I-64 Exit 8 Mixed Use Development and Traffic Mobility Study. Eric, you there?
Well, good morning, everybody. Appreciate the time. I'm going to give you a real brief overview of the Exit 8 I-64 Mixed Use Development and Traffic Mobility Study. Moving on to slide two, you'll see here our project background and the tasks for this project. We began the project in October of 2017, and we're scheduled for completion in June of this year. Highlighted in red, you can see the tasks that we've completed. So under task one, the existing studies and transportation plan summary has been completed, and we've also got a baseline of all the GIS project mapping. Under task two, our demographic profile has been completed for the economic study and the market analysis. And then we've started the stakeholder input and project meetings as well. Moving on to slide three, you can see the project study area just as a refresher for where we're looking at for this project. It is the 152 corridor from south around La Palette and Beach Fork Lake State Park up into downtown, looking at connectivity through there. On slide four, you'll see some of our steering committee and public input feedback that we've received. February 1st of 2018 was our first steering committee and public open house meetings. The Appalachian Heartland Highway Committee is part of our steering committee for this project, and they really see the corridor as a tourism corridor. Almost all of the landowners that are adjacent to the interchange did come out for the public meeting portion on February 1st, and they're very supportive of the project, which is encouraging. Some of the recommendations for things to look out for or to look at for this project are tax increment financing or zoning limits around the interchange to make sure that the recommendations from our study can ultimately be implemented. And then finally on slide five, here's our current project work and the upcoming meetings. We are working on completing the traffic and safety analysis and finishing up the market assessment for this project. And then we've got an upcoming internal work group meeting where we'll be compiling all of the stakeholder and public input that we've received and then starting into the draft alternative development process. And then last but not least, our upcoming public meeting on March 27th, we've got the steering committee meeting number two from 1:30 to 3:30, followed by the public open house from 4 to 6. So I know that was quick, but try to keep things moving on along, and I'm happy to answer any questions that folks have.
Okay, it looks like you're off the hook as far as questions.
All right.
But thank you. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you all for the time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Huntington Tri-State Airport Multimodal Economic Impact Study. I believe we have Eric on the line.
Good morning. I'm Eric Lang with CDM Smith, based here in Cincinnati, and I'll be talking to you about the economic impact study for the Huntington Tri-State Airport. Next slide, please. Let me start off by providing a quick overview of what I'll talk about. I'll cover three items, what we were tasked to do, what we've accomplished so far, and what we have left to do. So moving on to slide number three, please. We were tasked to complete an economic impact study of your airport and as well as qualitatively assess the multimodal improvements in the region. So understanding what an economic impact study does is pretty key to interpreting its results.
And I find the easiest way to think of an economic impact study is in terms of three basic elements: the measures, the categories, and the types of economic impact. Now, the measures are pretty straightforward. They consist of employment, which is the full-time jobs and the fractional part of part-time jobs added all together. Payroll, also straightforward. It's the wages, salaries, and benefits associated with those jobs that we measure under employment. And then finally, output, which is the economic activity of each business or entity, typically measured through gross sales, like for instance in the case of a flight school, or just the annual operating budget, and the example of a corporate flight department that doesn't generate sales. So moving on to categories, some of these are fairly obvious. The on-airport categories include things like airlines, the FBO, which provides fuel for the airlines and private aircraft, flight schools, the terminal concessions, restaurants, and gift shops that you find inside your airport. Those are all fairly straightforward. There's some others that are not so obvious, though. For example, the capital improvements that are done by the airport. These are things like improvements to taxiways and runways, as well as the visitors. The visitors spend money after they come through the airport. They're spending money and supporting jobs in your region and hotels and restaurants and things of that nature. And then finally, the types of economic impact. Direct are fairly obvious. And that's where the money first enters your regional economy. But then we take into account through an economic model how often that dollar circulates. For example, when your airline ticket agent spends money in the local economy, either buying groceries or buying gasoline or whatever, that dollar recirculates several times before it leaks beyond the boundaries of the area we're studying. We use an economic model to calculate those multiplier effects, add them together with the direct to come up with the total economic impact. Moving on to slide number 4. I'll talk about where we are. We're pretty well along in the study. Last November, I visited the airport to meet with airport staff and tenants to gather economic data. Since then, I've followed up with numerous inquiries and gathered all the needed on-airport data. Visitor impacts are assessed through a passenger survey effort that started last week, and we are planning on finishing by the end of the month. All this data has been entered into our economic input-output model, including those multiplier factors that are used to estimate the total economic impact for the airport. Slide number 5. As for the remaining elements of the study, it consists of these items. We need to analyze the passenger data once it is available and include those results in the model. We'll need to confirm and validate the outputs of the economic model, and once that is done, we can draft the deliverables, a report, executive summary sheet, and a slide presentation. We plan to have this finished no later than the end of May. Moving on to slide number 6. That wraps up where we are on this project. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, no questions, sir. Thank you very much. We really do appreciate the presentation. Okay, the last item on the update is the Barbersville Milton Non-Motorized Transportation Study.
Hi, this is Martin Guttenplan with CDM Smith. They've asked me to give a very quick update on the project. We started last October and will end in June of this year. If you haven't already, please go on to the project purpose slide. And basically, we're looking at the non-motorized options in Milton and Barbersville. Right now, there's some pretty significant gaps there. And ultimately, we will propose sidewalk and bike facility type roadway improvements to complete the network. And in doing so, we will prioritize those so that the most needed projects get built and designed first. And one of the things that we were asked to do is to do this in a way that we facilitate it going right into design. So we'll be including typical sections and the like with it. If you could proceed to the next slide, please. Right now we're in the evaluation of existing conditions and preliminary examinations. We've done the socioeconomic work. Even as we speak, we have folks out in Barboursville this morning looking at sidewalk conditions, recording ADA violations and issues so that we can bring that into the report. Some of these socioeconomic findings that we've come across may be apparent to you folks, but some of them were pretty eye-opening for us, particularly the employment. We're Barboursville, and we're looking at 41.2% was employed last year. That indicates some pretty low income and a real need for providing options other than driving. And there was we were noticing an aging population as well. If you can go on to the next slide, give you a little more information about the current status. We had a kickoff meeting in each community with the mayors and their staff, and both meetings were real positive, and there was a real good rapport there and eagerness to help and get involved. As I mentioned, we're currently doing the field validation right now. On March 8th, we've got a public meeting, two public meetings, one in each locality. And we're also doing stakeholder interviews for some key stakeholders. In mid-May, we expect to have a draft report with the recommended improvements, typical sections, and then cost information. Next slide, please. And so this kind of puts it on a little bit of a graphic. So ultimately, we'll have a final report at the end of June. If we go across to the left, we're doing those field checks. Then we're still analyzing system and safety. We're still waiting on some data from Department of Highways, public meeting, draft tech report. Anyway, so that's where we're at with the project. If any of you have any questions or have any specific suggestions, you can get them to us via Bethany or Salim, and I appreciate the time to talk.
Okay. Any comments or questions for Martin? Well, actually, I do. I've noticed we've had several requests, and I'm Paul Davis, and I'm with the Transit Authority here in Huntington, and we serve the Milton Barboursville area. And we've had a number of requests from the city of Milton for bus shelters and things of the like. We've been able to accommodate them with two new bus shelters, but they have requested up to like five, and then a couple of them were on the Route 60 corridor. And so, you know, while you're doing your study, I would encourage you to think about the transportation, you know, plan, including public transportation and bike accessibility. And if we do these bus shelters, we need to make sure that they're ADA compliant.
Right. They shared that list with us, including the two additional ones they've asked for. So one of the things we will be doing is looking for some recommendations on where to locate those shelters. My concern is that we do them in a way that if people need to cross the street, they can. And as you say, also so that we can meet the ADA requirements as well. But thank you again for the heads up.
Okay, appreciate that. Okay, any other questions for Mark? Okay, we're going to move on to item. Okay, we're going to move on to item number five, and that's amendment number four to the Cuyahoga FY 2018-21 TIP.
Yes,
We didn't get to see the equipment, but in the Boston Highway, Lord of Count is on the TV, so I meant to say this is a meeting number four. And the first thing from, I think you have a handout, the first thing from the highways to that one project in Wayne County, basically construction of woodland and natural stream. That's the project. You know, the highways. And the second on the left, the request from the GTA, from the authority, has requested to reduce funds for the living economic costs, very big for this line item. I think that's what the request from the fund is. I guess it's big with all the people here. Anything you want to add to this?
Pretty much an update, and we're just we're going to be needing to replace capital equipment as time goes on.
Yes, I think initially for us was a good amount of people sick. Now it's the amount of people to 8 million. That's the request for FY19. I think from Lower County, Transit has requested to update the fund for bus and bus facility line items. The project ID 95700. Mike is here. Anything you want to
look at on
this? Basically, also the request for bus replacement system 30B under the project ID 94870. Paying from one bus to 200, which the fund increased from 60,000 several months to 85,000. Like we have the first draft,
was going to be generated in February 23rd, and the final draft on April 23rd. Basically, if you find any comments on this document, please, still, this is the first draft, and hopefully, if there's any comments, we will address them before the final draft for the February 23rd. And we need the motion.
Is there a recommendation to move it off the policy board for presentation?
Delivery, which is basically the department within our organization that deals with public transit. I believe that they are preparing the group transit asset management plan that will cover the rural transit providers, but I don't think it's going to cover the urban transit providers. So I guess I'm assuming that the Ashland Bus System will be preparing the transit asset management plan. And I'm not sure. As far as social services agencies go, I don't know that they're required to do that. As far as I know, that's what I've heard, is that they're not. But I'm not really an expert on that.
I do know that over the next month or so, there is going to be a series of webinars that the Federal Transit Administration is putting on. Maybe we'll have some more information about the next couple.
I had sent out an email at the end of last week requesting just the three transit agencies and us, and hoping to get with West Virginia transit folks to talk about this. And the reason why is right now the way it stands is that, yes, West Virginia is going to be taking on all of the, a tier two level, which is 100, even if you're in an urbanized area, if you're under 100 vehicles, 100 and under. Same as Ohio, going to that, Kentucky's the oddball. Right now, they do not. I think it was a 5310 vehicle, 5311. Anyway, the certain ones, like Ashland, does not have any 5310 vehicles right now. They don't have certain ones, so I'm not even sure you know, so we're trying to figure out what to do with that. But in the future, Unit of Ashland does get a 5310 vehicle. They're actually titled to TTA. So we need to sit down and have a discussion in the future of how, even with Lawrence County with the 5310, how we want to address it on with that. So anyway, I sent out an email last, end of last week trying to get everybody together, and I'm going to work on that, trying to get a date and time so we can all sit down to try to discuss how, what direction we want to go. So
well, it's still kind of in flux.
Yeah. And,
but it sounds like we're going to get a real proficient on it real soon.
Yeah, but the thing that Bill von Borgman was, since we showed that we have the substitute to the TTA, the 5310 program, that means we need to have the transit asset management process as an area to complete that. That's the biggest thing. And when it comes to the 5307, I think that it's an individual responsibility of the transit operator. That's what also. I think you have to have your own transit asset management for 5307,
5339, 40. Well, I say it's like it's kind of a scary piece when everybody's talking about it, but the fact of the matter is we're already done.
Yeah.
Doing we have an asset management plan that we've done for 30 years or longer. Just
have to put in their format.
And I think it's just about being a TMA. How do we handle it? Is there something different, or how do we do this differently, or do we, you know, continue as we are individually? So I think these are just some discussion items that we just need to get together, maybe get questions out on the table, and then write them all down and take them to each of the state transit divisions and see what their input is and kind of what's from there. So
probably over the next several months, we're all going to become professionals.
Yeah, I think so.
We'll know more about this than we'll probably want to know.
I think one of the important things for the MPO is that when the transit agencies do set targets, you need to report those to the MPOs,
yes,
the state of good repair targets,
yes,
because the MPO has to take those targets and establish a regional target for the metropolitan planning area based on those. And I believe it's FTA's expectation that transit performance management will be included in the TIP and the MTP,
yes,
for any updates after October 1st.
Right.
So there is kind of a short timeline on that. So when you do know what your state of good repair targets are going to be, please let the MPO know so that they can move forward with working on the regional targets.
So we do have a meeting planned to.
I need to go back and figure out everyone in what days you say
okay. Okay.
Really, just especially for the Kayova, we have a responsibility. We have to have all the transit asset management plan at the night area. There's a deadline.
Okay.
Approach from Kayova. It was because of 5310. We need basically, hopefully, we can have a future meeting immediately.
So, Celine, has the MPO definitely decided to prepare a group TAM plan for the 5310 recipients?
Seems to me Ohio wants to do something, you know.
Because I don't know if you're actually required to as an MPO, since you don't actually operate the transit vehicles. Of course, it is an option.
Basically, they put a do it, but we don't have to show it to them. At least tell us you're doing something, but we'll not see.
Well, yeah. I guess it is that we do it, but if they come on site and they ask for it, then we have to show it to them.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
so we're really held liable, responsible for having the document, but they're not asking us to send it in to them to show,
yeah,
them right now what it is.
Would that cover the entire urbanized area for 5310?
That's something that's what we were going to talk about at this one,
yes,
meeting.
Okay.
Because the 5310 money comes to West Virginia, all the money five and second to West Virginia. West Virginia distributes that through Kayova and PT.
We have a split lever agreement for that. Those funds, well, not really, but some of the other ones.
Well, yeah. I mean, for the funding for the 5307, 5339, and if there would be any 5309 money, would there won't be. But it's a, we do have a split letter, and the 5307 operating funds is already split out in the allocation letter. So we don't, we generally take whatever is in that allocation table that we give to Lawrence County, and we're technically doing a split letter. But more than anything else, at this point, because we all need those funds, the 5339 is somewhat negotiable. And so if, let's just say Mike had a real huge plan for capital, and there's not a whole lot of money in the 5339 in the big picture of things, what, 230-some?
Yeah.
It's not a lot of money that we're splitting between the three transit systems. I mean, I can't, we can't even buy a bus for 339 money right now. It's just at the last legislation that was passed, may have been before the FAST Act, they pretty well sent all of the transit capital money to transit or rail. I mean, just to be honest about it. And transit took a pretty hard hit. And right now, we're suffering. I mean, all the transit systems across the nation are suffering because most of those capital assets went to upgrading rail. And so now we're way behind. And if you look at the average age of the fleet for transit buses across the nation, we're starting to see transit systems with buses that are average age at least 10, 11 years. It should be probably 5, 6 average age. Anyway, 5310, there's an application process and people will do it on a competitive basis on the coordination plan. So if you're a part of the coordination plan for that, then you can apply for 5310. And traditionally, so far, again, since we've become a TMA, that's been a problem. We haven't had a lot of applications. We've been going out and almost begging people to apply for this 5310 fund. And so as time goes on, I'm sure we want to get better at it. I'm sure that a lot of these people that are in the coordination plan are going to realize, yeah, I can get vans, I can get buses through the 5310 program. One of the people that we're starting to see now is CISA. They were getting buses and stuff when the state was operating the 5310. Now they're just realizing and have the money to be able to start replacing vehicles. So we're going to see more applications from them. Hopefully we'll see more applications from Ashland, Randy, and your group, and Mike. But hopefully, I mean, if it
seems more receptive now.
Well, I know it's new, and sometimes people say, well, the vehicles are going to be titled CPA for the first 4 years. Well, trust me, once the 4 years is gone, I mean, we give you the vehicle, we just sign. I mean, that's part of the agreement. You just got to maintain it. And because we're the applicant from FTA, we got to hold on to the title, so it's just, we got to make sure we're responsible. You're the subrecipient in this situation, so we got to make sure that the federal interest is being met and taken care of. And after 4 years, FTA says they don't care about it anymore, sure be. Okay, so you have the after crying reviews, you have the date. We're all going to get federal love this year. And so I don't know if there's anything to approve, go on about that. Kyle, the TMA umbrella, MOU, John.
Yep, I sent out an email this morning to everybody with the latest and greatest version of the umbrella MOU. We just have a few things we got to get done on it. Everybody has to get the specific agreement name listed in there and then pass it through whatever legal and signatory eyes you need on it to make sure that there's not something that we missed. So I asked for a due date of everybody to get the agreement name to Terry by next Friday, March 2nd. I understand that, you know, getting it through legal and that type of thing will take probably a little bit longer than that, but I would like to at least get that those names finalized and get those in. Get this taken care of.
Big time.
When do you expect us to sign this? I mean, when?
As soon as possible, but it doesn't have a due date. Well, we've passed the due date, so as soon as possible is now where we're at.
I would say, oh, I mean, we can sign it like next meeting.
I wouldn't sign it till it's gone through eyes of everybody to make sure that there's not some weird technicality that legal needs in there. That, you know, I mean, there's no point in signing it until it gets completely done and everybody's signed off on it. So, I would wait till everybody.
Time to be told the signature, 6 months.
Honestly, I didn't put that on there because I kind of want to wait and see, you know, what people think estimate-wise is going to get through legal, if that makes sense, right? I mean, my understanding is, Thomas, you've already kind of fed it through your team, so there really shouldn't be anything like that. You know, I believe West Virginia has done the same thing. I would think Ohio has done the same thing, so, you know, we could be looking at it. It could be signed by the end of March. That'd be awesome. But I also know that, you know, sometimes it can take a little while to get through the echelon of power. Right. So we could be looking at a little bit of time before it's officially official. Great. That's why I'm encouraging everybody to kind of get it in front of those eyes now. But I think we're good. Other than those files.
Appreciate your work on it. I know it's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Other, what else? We just kind of go over these things and say, yeah, well, that's been done. Thank you. But yeah.
But I mentioned that the last conference we had a conference call with this learning agreement for those of us. We need to sign that.
That's different.
And you are going to be added to the umbrella, right?
Yeah. So for now, put those names in there because the titles will probably be all fairly similar. And, you know, it's possible that those will be finalized before we get this finalized and signed. But let's put them in there to the best of our ability of what they're titled right now. So you'll have the one from Kentucky that Thomas has been working on, the one from Ohio that they just sent, you know, what its title is. My understanding from the conversation that I had with Brian Carr is that their agreement, they're looking at stripping out most of the planning stuff and just making it about the performance measures. But throw the title in of what they have sent recently because it probably won't change too much. Some of these are agreements you guys have had in place for years, so the titles are well known. I know that the recent conformity agreement is basically the exact same title as the old conformity agreement, so, you know, be okay.
So for the umbrella MOU, who's going to take the lead on circulating that? Is that going to be Cuyahoga?
Yes, Cuyahoga should take the lead on circulating it. I've taken the lead on trying to get it sent out to people and things, but,
right.
You know, this is not my agreement. We're consulting. So, yeah, I think Cuyahoga should take the lead once it's gone through everything. That's why I asked for things from the Secretary.
And I'm wondering, is there any possibility to speed it up that the agreement could be sent to all of the agencies simultaneously and each agency could just sign their own signature page?
Yeah.
Is that how we're going? Is that the best way to do that? Instead of sending it from one agency to another?
That's
to another.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the best way to do
page.
It.
Yeah. We get it into we have individual pages so that we can send the whole agreement and then they can just pull one page out and send that one page.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it says in the agreement that it becomes effective the date of the last signature. So whoever sends it in last, that will be the official date.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's all we have on our list. Thank you again.
Transportation performance
man,
Bernadette. Thank you. If everybody got one of these sheets. Okay, this presentation will be a little bit interactive because I want you to do work.
I guess everybody's heard of the transportation performance management. You're about to think of it. You're looking at this very first slide. Are you an expert now? Are you bored? Are you lost? Are you confused? Probably everybody in here is a little bit one of them on all of these. So I want to start out by doing something fun. Just indulge me a little bit. I want you to compare apples and oranges. How are they alike?
The round.
Round, fruit.
That's it.
Sweet, yeah, good.
Taste.
How are they different?
Sweet and round.
Okay.
Yeah, color.
Oh, good job. This is an excellent fruit. Okay, so here's what I wrote down, just when I was thinking, you've got almost all of those. round, bright colors, tastes good, fruit has seeds, it's healthy. Difference is not the same color, similar shape but not the same shape, unique taste, and the insides are different. Okay. And then, of course, because they're so different, you can't really compare apples and oranges. But you can compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges, right? Say this one looks better, that one looks smaller. Okay, the reason I mentioned this is because Congress came up with these performance measures. Because what was happening when you get to the border, every state is doing similar things, but they're doing them a little bit differently or using different sets of data. So, for example, when I was coming up 64 on Kentucky side, getting into West Virginia, Kentucky might have said the road smoothness was here at, you know, 95%, and I'll be here in West Virginia with 50%. The same road is going to be that much different. So what Congress is trying to do is they came up with these performance measures to get everybody to start measuring the same thing, perhaps using the same sets of data and making it a little bit easier to compare. But still, you can't compare this state to that state because they have different geographies, different populations. And so what they're saying is, I want you to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges in your state. That's why you're setting the target. So you're using the last 4 years of data. You know, well, we did this in 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. So we know that our target should maybe be up here based on our past years of data. And then you're looking at this. There's five elements to performance management. There's measures, targets, plans, and reports. First one we're going to talk about, though, is the goals. Congress sets the goals, what they wanted to do with all the federal money. They wanted to focus on safety, infrastructure conditions, congestion reduction, system reliability, freight movement and economic vitality, environmental sustainability, and the reduced project delivery. So they set the goals. Federal highway sets the measures. And there's three rulemakings that came out. Okay, looking at your sheet that I just gave you, there's three different colors. Okay, the first one, the yellow portion at the top, is all about safety. The green portion is about the pavement and bridges. And the blue part is the system performance. Now, if you're looking at this, you can see that safety, I've got all the targets for all the different states. Those ones have to be completed by the state and has a target date. You're looking over here on the column, right here. It has all the dates of everything you're ever going to need. But they were finished August 31st, 2017. The MPO target due dates were February 27th, 2018 this year. Okay, so when is that coming up? That's just a couple of days. They don't have to be included into the environmental planning documents until May 27th of this year. Okay, now that means not by that date. The next amendment that happens is the next update immediately after that date. You have to have them incorporated in. So not that date, but the date after the next change you make to your planning document, it has to be incorporated. Now, if you want to look at the next one, the pavement condition section, okay, they have the reason the HSIP came out first, because most of the states were already doing all those things together. You're looking, they had five different measures. They had number of fatalities. That's pretty easy to calculate. The number of serious injuries, that's also set. And they had the data set. Everybody used the same data set for that. Pavement and conditions, though, and bridge conditions, they are a little bit different sometimes because there's different ways to measure asphalt, different ways to measure concrete, and they have different parameters. So they decided to focus on the national highway system. So they wanted to know the percentage of the interstates in good and poor condition and the non-interstate portions of the NHS, as well as the same thing for the bridges, good and poor condition. So we haven't got any of those targets yet. Looking at your table, when are those due? When does the state have to have those to federal highway? Looking at your table. Target set for the state, right here. Just come here.
Hi,
Dale. Don't feel dumb. Everybody, first time you've seen the sheet, come on. State target due. When does it say these targets have to be submitted to the state?
May 31st.
also for the system performance measures. If you notice, there's four different ones of those, and inside each one of those, they have several different little measures that they want. So the first one is about travel time reliability. Why is that important, Beth? Come on, you guys. I know you had to read little donuts and stuff. Why is travel time reliability important? Because you got to go to work, right? You want to make sure that you're getting to work on time, most of the time. They use the 80th percentile for that. What does 80th percentile mean? Say, for example, I'm going to go from here to Marshall University, and 80% of the time, it takes me 20 minutes to get there. When they use the 80th percentile, it means 80% of the time, I will make it within 20 minutes or less. Or if you look down at freight, though, they changed it to the 95th percentile. And that's because it's even more important to truckers because of the just-in-time philosophy. No, you don't have any warehouses anymore, and if you're a trucker and you have this window of delivery time, you must meet that, or you pay a penalty. The trucker pays a penalty to the company. So it's really important to them. So they want it to be 95% of the time, I'll be able to make it from here to here in the time you told me. It'll take 2 hours to get from Cincinnati to Lexington. Well, that takes me an hour and 15 minutes. I drive back. If I know I have that two-hour window, 95% of the time, I will make it. So they're putting all these measures on all the states so that they can say, hey, this is exactly what I've done. These are the things that we can all consistently compare to each other. And if you notice that the targets up here for the states, they don't compare even. Those numbers are different for each state. But you're comparing yourself. So that first target that they're giving us here, going to use 14, 15, 16, 17 data, and they're going to say, I'm going to be able to set my target based on that information. Now, the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet has already calculated the annual peak hour and 6 hour delay calculation. They've got the TR, travel time reliability. They've got those separated out by each MPO. They have a number to provide each of the MPOs. Now, Kentucky, I had most states. We just had a national meeting, and it was pretty impressive. I was like, oh, I'm from Kentucky. But all the states are going to have this too, because it's all due by when?
May.
Perfect. Now, when did the MPO? Why is this important to the MPO? Because you have to have it incorporated into your planning document. And what happens then is you're saying, like you're doing with your safety targets by the 20, or what day? When do you have to have the safety target adopted by your resolution? Or letter?
On the 20.
27, right. Okay, so you have to have them all incorporated by your MPO and saying, yes, these are the ones we want, and then you have to incorporate them into your planning document. So you're going to have them listed in your plan, your MPP. Your TIP is going to say, well, this project here supports that target, that measure, and that target. By saying, oh, it's going to reduce the number of fatalities because there's a dangerous curve there. This particular project is supporting that. So you have to show where your investment supports your target. And if you're trying to reduce fatalities, that's how you're going to do it. So they also came up with something to make sure that the MPO did this. And the MPO planning agreement was one of the things that we've been working on so diligently. And it said it has to have these. Notice in federal highway language, they have should. That doesn't mean you have to do it. Shall, the. That's that special little word that we use that you must be in your agreement. Also, that planning rule added two new planning factors. So for your work program, it has 10 planning factors, not 8. And they added those two new ones. And then, of course, the customer transfer structure, the CMP, interested parties. A lot of things were in that planning world, but the one that was important to you guys was the performance measures, was the part saying you must list the data, your targets, who's going to do this reporting, who's going to collect the data, had a lot of things for you to do. Okay, now we're talking about the targets. In your consistency, you have to be talking to your state, you have to be talking to you and the public transit provider. And it sounds like that's happening here, which is good. So you want to integrate everything. Now, the states shall set performance targets within 1 year of the effective date of the final rule. That's where these dates came from. When the rule became final, that's where they came up with these dates. The MCOs have 120 days after the state sets theirs. So they can do it earlier, but if you look at that second column, target due date, when do you all have to have it? The very latest. You have to have your performance targets adopted by when? Yeah, but what's the date? Exactly, November 16th. Okay. Now, we talked about this. Your performance targets must be included in your SIP and your SCP and your MCP. Have to list the goals, have to establish the targets. And then from then on, it's in a four-year update cycle for the MCP. You're going to have to review those every 4 years. The SIP and the TIP have to discuss how your investment priorities achieve those targets. And we talked about that already. The next thing is your performance plan. Okay, that's one of your fifth, fourth element. When we talk about asset management plans, how many people have heard about them? Okay, and your transit asset management plan. Okay, it's very confusing because one's called the TAM, one's called the TAM. First, you should go over on the back. I've heard a lot of discussion here, and I don't know if you all know all about this. But if you're looking at the first part there, that's the highway portion, the transportation asset management plan. They call it the TAM. And it has eight elements, and it's only due date, and the things that happen after that. So they have the initial TAM is due April 30th. They're working like crazy to get this initial one to us. Okay? If you look at this second square box, where we're talking about transit asset management, they call it the TAM, no P included on that. And the first one is the state of good repair target. So if you look further down there, they're all listed right here. And it talks about the rules about what the state is going to do, what they have to do, and who they provide that information to. And then if you go down to the very bottom, the public transportation safety plan, that's another transit target. We're waiting on that still. They haven't finalized the rules. So those will be coming. So we have this one we're waiting on. This one is here. This one is here. We have a lot of dates here. This is your go-to sheet. It has all the different things. So I'm going to give you these other plans. We're going to talk about the safety plan, the transit plan, the CMAQ performance plan, and the state freight plan. How many of you have seen your state freight plan? Just one person, two people. Wow. Okay. Do you know that it exists even? The reason that everybody was rushing to get them is because they have National Highway Freight Performance money, special money that if you have it in a state freight plan, that you can spot on the project. So that plan had to be done by December last year. And now you can use that money. So they have it 2016 money, it's prior to 2019. So make sure that you know about these projects and that they're supposed to have coordinated with all the MCOs to do these things. Okay, we talked about the asset management plan in a little bit because it was on the back. It's a hot topic. Everybody's working on it right now. It's coming up. Back to the handout. Performance report. Okay, this is at the end. The state has to give their first performance report to us in 2016. And it was very, Kentucky gave us one page. A little bit on the back. Most of one page. Because they didn't have all this data or all these different things calculated yet. So this is what we've got now. And the report included the condition of performance of the National Highway System, which we talked about, the effectiveness of your investment strategy, which means in your TIP, how effective was your investment strategy? You picked these three projects. Did they help you reduce or meet your targets? Get to your targets. Did they help you? The progress in achieving the targets. Well, if you set it at zero deaths, where are you now? You're at 10 deaths per year? Well, you've made progress from 50, you've gone down, right? So they just want you to talk about that. And then, of course, if you're the state, they want you to talk about the congestion bottleneck because the national freight plan is being addressed. So freight is very important to everybody because everybody ate breakfast this morning, right? Everything you have is delivered on a truck or a boat or a plane, but mostly by truck. Okay, for our MCOs, performance of your system and meet progress in meeting targets. If you're an MPO that decided to do scenario planning or set up local policies and investment plans, strategies, you have to also report on that. I think this MPO did not do any of those particular things, right? Okay, so you're just focusing on your condition of performance and your meeting targets. That was really quick. I was trying to make it quick because we have a full agenda. But this sheet will be very helpful. Does anyone have any questions on this sheet? I know you haven't had a lot of time to study it. But it will come as a nice tool when you're talking about these things, when you're looking at your plans and your tips, and you can compare state to state and just say, hey, why is this so different? And you can ask intelligent questions because you know. Yes, sir. Yes, I'll send it to the link. Anybody else have any questions?
Bernard, with the MOA update, you mentioned the requirement to address performance management, sharing data, that sort of thing. Those can be that can be documented outside of the MOA, correct?
Correct.
So we're attempting to address that through our MOAs, but it's possible that as we get into this, we'll need more details. So we may supplement the MOAs with other processes outside of the MOA.
A lot of people are
okay.
So West Virginia is, you know, what they did one grant, Sheriff 2 grant, to kind of figure out what they had and what they didn't have, and now there's another one, kind of move forward to setting up some of those processes. So, you know, performance measure document that they have right now is pretty generic, and the goal is that at the end, through all the workshops and everything, that there will be more specific policies and procedures set into place that will either be incorporated into the document or just a standalone thing. So a lot of them.
Good. Glad
yeah.
to hear that.
Yeah. Because there are very few states that have been doing performance management as a part of their regular, everyday, normal way of work. And a lot of them, it took them 10 years to get to a point, you know, where they finally feel comfortable with it. So we understand that it's going to be a process and it's going to take a little while.
We'll get there.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions?
Thank you. Very good. Very encouraging. Okay, Celine has asked me to jump around on the agenda just a little. So we're going to move to item number 11. Skip 10 for now, but we'll come back to it. Safety Performance Management Coordination Update.
Yes, actually, I need to capitalize on the presentation. Like, to be considered, first of all, like for the safety performance management, that the BM one for Kiowa decided we would support each state DOT target. And that's really, I think, based on this line, we're not supposed to be aware. Actually, we're supposed to meet that deadline on this Friday. That's what really the Kiowa will do this Friday, and we need really kind of this deck to go and need a motion to support that move on Friday.
Okay. Diversely, we need to take action on this item and move it toward the policy meeting on Friday. And is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second? All right, Randy, thank you.
And this one, really, by signing this resolution on Friday, that will help us to meet the third deadline that MBO target, that due date on the government that sheet, that February 2017. And hopefully, we will try to do the next step for the planning document.
I need to call for the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So number two, that me and Ashandra, I'm going to address our point here. For the two, for performance measure two, business and bridge condition, I think that's the deadline, November 16th. And hopefully that we will meet that deadline in October meeting. Okay, that we are supposed to have a meeting that hopefully, and also the intention to do similar what we're going to do for the safety, We're going to support each state DOT target. For the performance three, I think based on our standing, we are being for the CMAC for performance period two. I think for the 2022, it was our area less than a million. That we didn't have to worry about it now. I don't know that true or not. That is
not. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sandra, do you want to add anything?
No, other than to just remind you that as far as the ones that aren't due until round two, because it is based on population, because this is a TMA, because RIC has air quality conformity that they're still under, that it, you know, it's a consultation amongst the area because it's set for the urbanized area. So.
Basically, just for my own sake, for the performance measure three, that thing we have to do no action before 2022?
For CMAC.
Well, for CMAC. How about the other things? I didn't see
you have to do all of them except for the subpart H.
Oh, that means for the three also we have to do action on the October meeting, right? For two and three. By October, to meet the deadline of November 16th.
Yeah, because they'll be sending you, the state will be sending, states will be sending you information on the system performance, on the freight, and then the percent of non-SOV.
It seems to be more complicated than safety.
Oh, way more complicated. Yeah, there's many more moving parts and dates and everything like that. But the and I sent it out to you back in whenever we had that first workshop in the fall with the West Virginia about, you know, what ones that you are responsible for doing and the options that you have. We're setting targets, which is accepting, setting your own, and then some of them have a hybrid kind of thing.
Okay, that before for the DM3 system performance, rate, congestion, we have to do this by November 15th.
For system performance and rate.
Okay, that is for the air quality, 2022.
The only ones that have to do that right now are the ones that have a million population. So for Kentucky, it's only Cincinnati. The next time, the next reporting period, which is every 4 years, then it's going to include Louisville because their population is already almost there, and it'll be Cincinnati. And then if it was then. In 2020? 2022, yeah. Everybody who's a TMA has to do it. Now it's only they just want to get a preliminary report, performance report, get only the $1 million people. Yeah. 1 million population people have to do it.
For this problem, we support the three states target.
For safety.
For the safety. That means I have to do everything, the name for the MTB. I have to amend the MTB to have
the. Yes. Well, no. The way the rule states is the next action you have, whether it be an amendment or a new MTP, they expect that information to be in there. So, right. So if there is an action that requires you to amend the MTP, then at that point in time, put it in. So basically, any document you produce after that date in May, we expect to see the performance measures and the progress in them.
Yeah, it's written on the sheet. If you look in that column, it says what's next. Update or amendment.
Yeah.
Okay, that's then I need to go back to the chairman of the market. Now, for this, actually, initially I was looking at the agenda, so I was to be impressed in a new plan, a new house. But I think Terry, I was considering you on board on the initial process, and Terry, basically, what understanding we need to sign this document before May 20th.
As I mentioned earlier, as part of the meeting that I'm trying to set up for the next week or two with the transit agencies, this is going to be one of them. Because I deal with mainly though of Ohio, so we need to get with Ohio and get. There's one little thing I changed. Please change on there. It needs to have Ralph's name on it instead of Mike's, but. We're going to be working on getting that signed, and it's just, you know, once again, I'm just, to me, it's just policy, paperwork that needs to be signed, put through, and we're working on it.
And for my understanding, for the performance planning agreement for Ohio and West Virginia, we have to sign by May 1st. That's what the state wants to do. How about Kentucky? What's the design for the planning agreement?
We'd like to have it done as soon as possible. I think basically before we have to sign another self-certification.
By next meeting.
Yes, we'd like to have it done by the next meeting. Yes. And if not, you have a copy of the MOA.
Okay.
So would it be possible at the next meeting, if it's not been signed by the City of Ashland, we might look into passing an authorization or a resolution authorizing the chairman to sign the MOA when you get it from the Ashland Bus System. But definitely we want something done at the next meeting.
Yeah, okay. That's definitely before. Okay. The next meeting for the attack is April 24th and the ball is the 27th.
The next meeting after that would it be in October or September?
The City General lets them know it will be in September.
Okay, so yeah, I think September would be a little later than we would want.
I think thank you, President Sammy Shantra, that at least now we could see something we can follow, actually. I could see the light at the end of the tunnel with this problem. It's confusing, really. And now I know what the difference between transportation and asset management and
the TAM.
Head east on 3rd Avenue.
Technology acting up.
I think that's
okay, very good.
Thank you.
Awesome information here. Okay, item number 13, we're out for the brief project update. And Beth,
anyone
talk to us what's going on
right there? They started construction on the elevator project.
Great.
They're broken ground. They're moving along with that. And then they also applied to our sub-allocated funds to do design for their routine intermodal facility. Yeah. Here you have more information about that. The sub-allocated funds.
Okay. City, anything? Great. You didn't get to introduce yourself. You came in fashionably late. Can I introduce yourself when you speak?
I am Risha. I'm the planner for the City of Huntington, mostly just kind of continuing on with projects as it relates to the Pauline Rose Shelter House, mostly relevant here. We are also working with an intern right now to work on some maintenance issues that we need to deal with the Pauline Rose Shelter, as well as connections.
I would add to you that we still have $82,500 for bike racks.
To talk to you about that. I'm actually talking with Ed Tucker as well, who may also have reached out to you at some point.
Ed and I have been talking.
Yeah.
He was supposed to get back yesterday, but I haven't heard from him.
Okay. Well, he emailed me, and I think we are trying to make sure we coordinate those messages. So, yeah, absolutely. We will definitely take them.
I was telling Ed that we're down to the point where
we need to see.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we're with you, and we'd be happy to help make that happen.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. We have a
statewide
freight study plan update. West Virginia.
Oh, well, they're not here. So what I can tell you is that they completed one. It was submitted. It needs work. It is not approved.
Okay. Not shitty. That was a big West Virginia Road to Transparency Outways Program. Anybody know anything about it?
I know really two projects advanced in our area, six projects, US 52 improvement, $150 million, and the closed interchange with the new interchange with road connector from I-64 to I-60, about $50 million. This project is moving, been advertised to be implemented as a design. Maybe Shaka, do you have an update on this?
The list changes constantly and regularly.
Even though
remember, you know, most of the projects that they are doing underneath this are projects that have been on the list, you know, in the STIPs and the TIPs for years and years and years and years. That they're trying to actually, and then they're dusting a few old ones off and bringing them in. Some of which you might not see necessarily because they're not within an MPO area. But they, I mean, they're moving forward. They're getting their work done. I haven't seen our engineers in weeks because they're out, you know, looking at stuff and getting stuff done. So I think they're preparing. They already did the Garvey 1. I think they're preparing for their Garvey 2 sale coming up soon. So the one thing I do know is that, like, along I-64, the project along I-64 for repaving and everything like that, that's getting close to getting ready to move and start doing something with that. So travel along I-64 is going to stink something bad for, you know, the next 2-3 years. And then I heard rumblings of them talking about the Nitro Bridge, what they're doing with that. So, you know, there's going to – all of West Virginia is going to be a big construction zone. They're working very hard to try and hire people now. So if you know people for jobs, they're constantly posting on the Facebook page that they're hiring. So I think at this point in time, they're looking for bodies, and they'll worry about, you know –
we'll train you.
Yeah, we'll train you. On-the-job training, I think. So, but, I mean – other than that, they are constantly updating, you know, their list of what's going on based on what they're hearing as far as what needs to be done and environmental clearance, that kind of stuff. So it's an ever-shifting list. And since it's state-funded, we are being involved in case they do decide to AC any of them. But we don't necessarily, unless it's the interstate, we'll definitely be pretty involved.
Thank you. What's going on
in the Commonwealth? Well, lots going on. I guess most of you are familiar with the SHIFT process, which we used to develop the new draft six-year highway plan. And, of course, that was primarily a data-driven process, but we did get input from all the MPOs and area development districts, so I appreciate that. The draft six-year highway plan is now out, available to the public. It's the legislature is doing the approval process right now, so there's no telling what kind of changes they might make. But as of now, we do have some projects in Boyd and Greenup counties, and it's primarily bridge and pavement projects, so asset management essentially. And that's actually pretty typical for the state as a whole. We have quite a bit of bridge maintenance projects, pavement rehabilitation, and we do have a couple projects that are outside of that category in Boyd County, but these were in the original, the current six-year plan as well. So no changes, really, just changing the funding a little bit. And then, of course, we do have the dedicated Ashland funded projects in there just for informational purposes, but the MPO actually has control over those funds, so don't worry too much about you know, if you need to change something compared to what's shown in the six-year plan, that's at your discretion. Of course, Greenup County, we do have approving Kentucky 207. That did make it into the new recommended highway plan. That's about it. I don't want to go through all the bridge and pavement projects. I know we're kind of running a little bit late, but if you do have any questions about those, talk to me or Joe Callahan in the district office. Of course, we're also working on the meeting the new regulations related to performance-based planning and programming, so updating the MOAs and all that kind of stuff, which we've talked about already. What's going on at the central office?
Thank you. Any other greater Boyd or Greenup County projects?
Joe Callahan was not able to make it today and had a prior commitment, but he did send a handout here and has all the projects and updates. So, like I said, because we are running a little bit later, I'm not going to go over these. But once again, if you have any questions, either call me or Joe Callahan, and we'll be happy to go over the project.
Great. Thank you. Okay, now we're
going to
go back over to IO. Patrick?
PID is 95415 and 97313. That's the various payment markings and kind of County Road 549, repaving. Those projects were meant to go at the end of last year, and I had to hold them over for slip repair on one of the roads. We had PID 102-206, that was County Road 5 at the 0.17-mile mark, and that project is complete. We're just waiting on completing the final documentation on that project. We have PID 102-201, that's County Road 1 at the 5.35-mile mark. Contracts are out. We're just waiting on the start time. They're waiting on the asphalt plants to open up. PID 102-202, that's County Road 4 at the 4.75. That's a split project also. And we're waiting on the encumbrance from the award documentation. So once we get that encumbrance, then we can award the project, actually go out and sign the paperwork. PID 99-201, that is County Road 18 and 15, that's supposed to go fiscal year 20. I'm working on finishing up the plans on that right now. I need to get that moved up as soon as possible because one of those roads is completely broke down. The big projects, 106-508, that is right now, that's US 52 and State Route 243. And that's a study, and we're working on having that completed by May the 28th. So that's through the Transportation Improvement District in Lawrence County. We have what's called the road project, and that is the roundabout there on the interchange. That's PID 97484. And at the time we've submitted the award documentation, we're just waiting for the encumbrance to sign the contracts on that project. PID 98815, that is County Road 410 and Walmart Way, and that's the roundabout at that township road. And we're just waiting for the funding to be available for that project.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Are you going to be Ralph tonight?
I can't.
Mike?
All I really can tell you about the riverfront is that Chris and Ralph are working on the project, and the latest I've been told is that they're waiting on the Corps to sign.
No major updates. We got a rock remediation and resurfacing project on 52 coming up. The State Route 93 within the city of Ironton happens early FY19. And Chesapeake Bypass, we're still acquiring right away with the funding we have. And outside of that, Portsmouth Bypass is set to open up at the end of the year. About it. It should be happening this spring. I believe it's sold and been awarded. We're just waiting on the construction season to start.
Thanks, Scott. Okay, we're down to number 14, the 5310 transit program for the Huntington area. And Terry.
Okay, just real quick, we finally got to the place where we have all the applications in. From round five, which actually started in April, so you see how sometimes things take longer than anticipated. But the applications received, we have PTA is requesting purchase of Habit 2 cutaway vehicles, or did you increase that on the application? Okay, four now? Okay. And also for mobility management, we'll help supplement Brian's pay right here. CISO has applied for purchase of one cutaway vehicle and also for contracted services, which is a kind of a new concept for us in our area. Other states do this. This way that they can actually pay for pay by service, pretty much is what it is. You know, it's not, you know, you're going to, I guess, the way they go pick them up and then they get a reimbursement for it. The CISO does by client instead of them just getting money to operate a service. Is that simplified? Okay. And so this is kind of new for our area, and right now we're hoping that we're doing this as a 3-year contract. No? Still? Okay. There is a few looking at different. We do. We operate this program
year to year.
Yeah, there's a year-to-year contract, but we have guaranteed them money for 3 years as long as we have the funding and the program is successful. Correct?
As long as the program is successful year to year.
Year to year. Okay. Yeah. So there's still some caveats there. Like I said, this is a new for us because as Paul mentioned earlier, 5310 program, we have been begging people that are eligible applicants to apply for this funding. So we are trying a different pilot program, which this contracted services is one. So right now the way it is that all the paperwork has been received. We provided TTA. TTA is in the process of requesting and purchasing, placing orders for the vehicles. And so hopefully within the next, hopefully by the end of this week or next month, we would be able to get spend everything that they need so that they can go ahead and submit it into the database. And then they'll still work.
We're still working with the FDA to get this grant approved.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have enough applicants, we have to change the policy to talk about that. But anyway, hopefully by in the next week or two, the grant will get approved and we'll be able to move forward with applying funding the way it was intended.
So, and like I said, this program actually is one that takes a lot longer than you really think. Something when you go through the application process, you get the application, you process it. There's so many steps that have to be taken, you know, that you have to meet. Procedures through FTA. We have to have clearinghouse review. We have to have, you know, there's just so many different parts to it that you don't even think about. So, you know, like I said, the application cycle started in April, and that's why we only usually have one cycle a year now. And this one actually covered 2 years of funding for this one because we got behind. And then this next application cycle we have will have 2 years of funding, and then we should be back on schedule to have 1 year of funding. So that's kind of where we are with that. If you need to know exact details of costs and everything, we'd be happy to provide it to you.
You might as well continue talking about the sub-allocation of funds.
Okay. Well, that's another application process that we have, and we now have all the applications received. We have the information from each project. We may have to tweak some of them because there's still some eligibility questions for some areas. We actually had 13 projects for between our tri-state area. Two were in Kentucky, and the remainder, I think, let's see, there were 7 in Cabell County and 4 in Wayne County. I'm just going to go over them very quickly. And once again, if you need the details, I would be happy to see us. You know, one of us, Bethany, Salim, or I, and we have all those things. So in Cabell County, we have the Greater Huntington Park and Recreation District. They're requesting funding for transportation and access to an all-inclusive playground, which will address, you know, with ADA for all children to play. The total project cost is actually going to be a design for that. The total project cost is going to be $25,000 is what they're requested. Each of these projects are 25% match. So I'm not going to tell them to go through the match, but I'm going to do total project cost. The second one is the City of Huntington for Howard Weir Improvements at Columbia and 13th Avenue. And they're going to complete preliminary engineering and design at that area to provide a safe pedestrian crossing across Howard Weir Boulevard between Columbia Avenue and 13th Avenue. There's an initial study of the intersection and it recommended a split pedestrian crossover, and which is also known as the Danish Crossing, that provides a center median refuge to connect the offset intersection. So that they're requesting that for a total of $75,000. The third one in Cabell County is the 14th Street West Path and Complete Street Improvement, and the City of Huntington is requesting that. And this is to complete the preliminary engineering and design, which entails connecting two important segments of the Paul Ambrose Trail for Health between Memorial Park Trail and to the south to the south and to the western levee trail to the north that they save on the road connection. And that is a total of $100,000. Now, each of these, like I said, we have much more descriptive things. I'm just giving you a summary. The fourth one is the Third Avenue Complete Street, Phase 1. City of Huntington is also sponsoring this, and to complete preliminary engineering and design for Phase 1 of the Third Avenue Complete Street project, which would bring Third Avenue in line with plans to create a safe bike and pedestrian connection between a currently dangerous section of U.S. Route 60, and also include sidewalk repair and a two-way cycle track along with the project in that whole area. That is requesting $250,000. And that's the next. The fifth one is Arlington Boulevard Drainage Improvements, and that's the Huntington Stormwater Utilities would be the sponsor, and to complete preliminary engineering and detailed environmental to complete construction and design drawings and specifications for drainage facilities along or adjacent to Arlington Boulevard. This has been recommended from a study that has occurred last year, and they're requesting $250,000 for that. Tri-State Transit Authority is requesting two lift-equipped transit buses and to replace a 2009 vehicle, which have extended their life expectancy, or replacement for vehicles. Total cost $850,000. Kinetic Park Trail System, Phase 1, was sponsored by the Huntington Municipal Development District, and they want to construct a trail system in and through Kinetic Park to provide recreational, educational activities for public schools, park tenants, and guests. The property that's on accident is owned by the HMDA. And preliminary engineering and design have been completed, and the final design plan should be finalized soon so that they would be able to move forward right away with construction. Okay, so those are the seven projects in Wayne County, in Cabell County. The four in Wayne County is that we have the Hardy Road Connector, which it goes on with the Heritage Farm and Museum and Village Access Road, and it's to design and for environmental assessment. Like I said, we'll complete that, which has been started with the other project. And that's for a total project cost of $850,000. The second is the Huntington Tri-State Intermobile Parking Structure, which Bethany briefly mentioned, and with the Huntington Tri-State Airport. And it's going to do preliminary design at the planned intermobile public parking structure at the airport. Several studies have been completed and have suggested that this be completed for further design. The total project cost is $650,000. Next was CSX Underpass Drainage Project located between Central Avenue and Tenure Branch. The Village of Marvinville is the sponsor, and this is to complete a study to identify the need for improved drainage. It will also provide a detailed cost estimate for design and construction. Total project cost of $125,000. The last one in Wayne County also is from the Village of Barbersville, and it's pedestrian sidewalk safety improvement project and safe route to school along College Avenue north of Greenwood Way to the Park Road entrance, and that's to provide a safer travel environment for the public and students that reside in that area. Now we're on to Kentucky. We have two projects in Kentucky, one in Boyd and one in Greenup. The one in Greenup County is safety improvements to a railroad crossing in Lloyd, which is in a subdivision of Queens Landing, and it does fall in the certain types of roadway classifications, and it does meet that. And it will be a safety project, and so there we have to replace and upgrade the current railroad crossing located there, and little interesting twist on this is that Kentucky, people who have to do the work on this project actually have to be a railroad. So the funding will go to the railroad, and most of it, the construction will go into utilities, and just that's the way that they have it. So the total project cost of that is $350,000. And we'll have a contract there, what you see,
District 9, and we'll have a contract with CSX to complete the work on that. And the other is the Boyd County and the City of Ashland, the downtown streetscape and Doll Street reconstruction, planning study, and design report. They're wanting to do a downtown streetscape, and there's multiple elements on this project, and we're going to have to go in, and each element, we're going to have to determine whether it's eligible or not. And so even though we know that there's many parts of this that they have submitted, I'm not going to read the whole description because some of this is not eligible. Some of it is not going to be eligible for funding, but that doesn't mean that they can't go through and fund the other portions of it with the project. So basically downtown streetscape, and then they have some reconstruction on Doll Street, which is a city street and some sidewalks. And on that one especially, they want to widen the roadway, but they can't with this type of funding because of the type of road it is, but they can do some type of sidewalks and some other issues of lighting and stuff. So we're working with Thomas and other folks that came with CMEX system information, the Kentucky Federal Highway, and we're going to work closely with them. And so they're going to probably tweak their requests a little bit, but right now they have their project request at $495,000. That's what I've been working on. Anybody have any questions?
Yeah, I'm kind of like in point one for that question.
Yeah.
But what's with Ohio? We talk about projects and at the end, what's missing? What about the FPP funds in Ohio, state bank, and all that? What's going on there?
Ohio actually funds the whole project that is currently most of the construction. Basically, the roundabout, $1.5 million, 100% of our money came. We have the interchange application, and we have the Lawrence County study.
I was afraid they weren't getting any money.
Ohio actually, their program is overheated. We extended all the money for them for the next 3 years. That Ohio is very aggressive.
Yeah, and they have a little bit of different, you know, request responses.
Yeah.
Because in every, you know, this money is not all in one pot. It's West Virginia gets their amount of money, Kentucky gets theirs, and Ohio gets theirs. So there's always a little different take on how each state reviews projects and deems eligibility. So, you know, one person in West Virginia may say good, somebody in Kentucky says, well, I don't think that doesn't seem quite right. So, you know, if in future, if you come up and you see, say, well, West Virginia did it, well, that doesn't mean Kentucky's going to do it. So,
Ohio, the program is more flexible.
Yeah.
Even if there is not enough money, we can borrow from our future funding, or we can borrow from other NGO who has money. Our program really is
just to make sure Patrick can buy.
They're getting there. They're getting their money.
Yeah,
we've
got a question.
They're getting their money. I promise you.
No,
I'm sorry,
I'll
call Bill Day. Okay.
Yes, I
know. I think he's good. So anyway, what I want to do with these is, like I said, I'm working with all the agencies. We need to present these to the policy board. Once they're approved, we'll send a letter to West Virginia DOH for funding approval, and also Kentucky. There's a different, like I said, everyone does it differently, and we'll process it the way Kentucky wants their process and get the funding moving and get them in the TIF and the SBIP and all that jazz.
Okay, well, you have your committee, Boys and Grants, Citizens Advisory Committee.
Up again? Okay. yes, we met on February 15th, which was last Thursday. We had good attendance and a healthy discussion on projects, and this is where some of the issues or concerns came about with the Boyd County project, and like I said, Thomas has been helping us with that. This group, you know, like I said, they're an informal group. I think it went well. They've recommended the projects to move forward based on tweaking them to meet the eligibility requirements.
Very good, thank you. Number 17, other business, several updates. Other, anything else?
Heard it all.
Okay. Heard it all. All right. You have a video?
Yes, a 2-minute video. We can see it after that.
Okay. Does that look like? I guess I think.
Calendar. Now that you're a TMA, have you considered having more technical advisory committee meetings? You know, you don't have to have as many policy meetings, but you do because this is a 2.5 hour meeting. Have you thought about having moving them to every month so you have a shorter meeting time?
We try to. I would suppose usually we try to make them 4 years if possible, like 4 meetings a year. But depends on the need. But we have 3 meetings a year. But the fourth one depends on the need. If the request came.
Right, she's saying it because it's so long. Why do we have
to have yeah. And I will discuss this one.
We've been having transfer provider meetings too. That's been helping a little bit. So I think you make a valid point. I think there's a lot of things moving on the deck right now. Maybe beneficial. A lot of stuff 3 or 4 months later, 5 months later, you come back to it.
Yeah, we'll try to see how we can. And now, actually, the law is in the 3 meetings a year, officially. But the fourth one, maybe try to create the fourth one. Maybe that will ease the thing.
I'm just asking if you've considered it.
But the problem, most people have to drive long distance.
Oh, yeah.
That's also, like, God, 2 hours, 3 hours. Most of the people in the drive distance. That's what also try to make that a minimum. But next time we'll try not really try to reduce it as much as we can. Try to limit to 5 minutes.
Well, Sean said they're not usually that long, so
yeah,
I was just asking.
For a while.
Usually it is.
Okay.
Reason why they're a little longer is that several of them were winding up, you know, this is the end of their project, so they were giving kind of their summary. I think I know two, maybe three of them, they were finishing March, April, May, June,
yeah.
And they were.
Well, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Do they want to move to adjourn?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll see how we have four more possibly in the summer.
Okay. We'll see you on Friday at the policy meeting. You're not coming?
I'll be in Ohio.
Oh, okay.